Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you by the Era Media Group, publishers of ShowSite Magazine. Together, we are strong supporters of the American Kennel Club and the preservation of our purebred dogs. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a very special guest today. Dr. Marty Greer is joining us on a new program here at Pure Dog Talk called Veterinary Voice. And Dr. Greer is going to be a regular guest. You guys are so lucky. Today, we are going to start our conversation by talking about C-sections, something that is scary and possibly life-threatening and maybe unnecessary. So, Marty, thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. So let's talk about C-sections, when we do them, when we don't do them, some of those warning signs. We're going to have a graphic of some of this that we'll include on the website, but I'm going to let you start off with what you're looking for as a veterinarian in this sort of a situation.
Sure. And you're right, it is scary. It's one of those really tough decisions, and you always feel when you do one, you maybe didn't need to, and when you don't do one, then you feel maybe you should have. So people are really conflicted, and it's not easy for veterinarians to make recommendations either. So I'm just going to tell you our perspective. It's not always an easy decision. Now, sometimes it is. You walk in the door, there's clearly a problem. There's very little question that we need to go to C-section, and if we're going to save puppies, that the faster we get there, the better. But there are definitely times that you just really feel conflicted, and you're really struggling with coming up with whether a C-section is necessary, when the C-section is appropriate. So those are all struggles that we go through as well as you do. So I want people to understand that there's a lot of information that comes into making a decision on whether a C-section is necessary. So the graphic that I've given you has a pretty comprehensive list, and I'm not going to read it all because it's a little tedious to just read, but there's a pretty comprehensive list to help people in a decision-making mode. It's not quite an algorithm, but it's similar to that in that if you see too many yeses on this list, or even sometimes one yes on this list, that it's appropriate to go to C-section. And one of the great challenges is when you're going to your regular veterinary clinic, you've got a good relationship with them, and you know what's going on, and they know you, and you know how to work with each other. But when you end up at an after-hours or emergency clinic, it becomes more challenging. They probably don't do as many C-sections as your regular veterinarian does. They probably are not as well-versed in what your expectations are. So it makes it a pretty tricky place to be in the middle of the night when you're sleep-deprived and you're dog is in trouble and your puppies are in trouble, and they look at her and they go, well, she looks fine, and she probably does because probably started labor and then stopped, and she's just kind of staring at you waiting for you to do something. And they look at her and go, well, she looks okay to me. I don't think you need a C-section. And you're like, yeah, but there's eight little babies in here and they're not okay and they're in trouble and we need to do something. You don't always get that response from a referral center to promptly intervene.
So that's a really great point, and I think we can leave the graphic there for people to look at and address, but I think one of the things that's so critical is planning ahead. So there's some of the questions on here. Do you know that you have one puppy? Do you know that you have 13 puppies? So those are the sort of things that you can be prepared so that perhaps you can schedule the C-section with your regular veterinarian or something along those lines. Do you have any suggestions on that?
Definitely. We strongly encourage people to do good timing at the front end, to do an ultrasound mid-stage so that they know roughly what they're expecting, and then to get a puppy count x-ray prior to the time that she goes into labor. So those three pieces can allow you to really be organized and really well prepared. And I have a lot of clients that are reluctant to do progesterone testing to time the bitch because they're like, well, I can get her pregnant. I don't need that help. And that's probably true on a lot of cases, that without progesterone timing, your timing is good, your male is fine, your female is fine, you've got it all figured out, and you know when she's due to be bred. But the problem is, pregnancy should be 63 days long, plus or minus 2 days either side of it. And if you breed, and in fact, I was just on the phone today with a client a few minutes ago who bred every other day for a total of 8 days, we have no idea when that dog ovulated. We have no idea what the end of the pregnancy should be. So pregnancy can look 58 to 68 days long when you're looking at timing based on breeding dates alone. But when you're looking at it based on progesterone timing telling us the exact date of ovulation, they are pregnant 63 days plus or minus 48 hours. Before 48 hours ahead of time, the puppies are immature. Their lungs aren't mature enough to get them developed. The puppies come out, they don't survive. If you go more than 2 days after the due date, more than 65 days, placentas start to deteriorate and the blood flow dissipates and then you no longer have viable puppies. So either way, you've got a four-day window, and that's one of the hand-wringing events that happens, unfortunately, in a lot of practices every day is, well, I don't know exactly when she's due, so I don't know if today's the right day or not. And there's pieces of information we can gather. We can do progesterones at the end of the pregnancy. People call them reverse progesterones. I call them insane because it costs you a whole lot more. I've had clients drive here every single day for 10 days to try and figure out when their dogs actually do. And you would have saved yourself a lot of time and a lot of money if you had just done the progesterone testing up front. So it just makes it a lot more difficult if we're trying to time with reverse progesterones, with ultrasound to look at intestinal motility on the puppies to assess their maturity, to look at x-rays to assess the maturity if you're looking at lactation, vaginal discharge. I mean, those pieces are pieces that we use if we don't have timing on the front end. But we save a lot of gray hair and a lot of money if we just know on the front end. And if you're really, really reluctant to spend the money on it, at least get the blood samples drawn, sun down, have the blood put in the freezer at your veterinary clinic. And then if you end up with a high-risk pregnancy or the need for a C-section intervention, you can pull those progesterones out, have them run, and go back at the time of ovulation and determine the ovulatory date instead of having to do it on the other end. And most veterinary clinics have technicians that are happy to do this for you. They may not completely understand you. Well, they may not understand you anyway because you're a breeder. We love breeders, but not every veterinary clinic is comfortable working with breeders. But if you explain to them this circumstance that you can have those blood samples saved, and then you can run them if you need to, if you run into a problem with a singleton, if you run into a problem with too big a litter, if your bitch goes into labor prematurely and she starts to have trouble, you've got that opportunity to say, okay, now we can run those progesterones, now we know exactly what our ovulation date was, and now we can put that 63-day mark on it and start to decide when to do that C-section.
I had never heard or even thought of that. I like that concept. But I think too often as breeders, and God knows we've all been there at one point or another for one reason or another, we fall into that penny-wise, pound-foolish concept that says I'm going to save money, but it could cost you pretty drastically.
Right. Losing a litter is a very, very expensive proposition. It's not just expensive financially, but it's very hard emotionally on anybody. The owner, the veterinary clinic, the veterinary technicians, it's tough on everybody. So anything we can do to try to avoid that is absolutely useful.
Absolutely. I have been there, done that, and I will tell you that the one that was the worst was how hard it was on the dog. Lost an entire litter, long story we're not going to go into, but on the day she was due to have her puppies, and this is no exaggeration, she had gathered up all of her stuffy toys and put them with her in her whelping box, basically. And on the day she was due, she spent the entire day picking up all 9 of those stuffed toys, the exact number of the puppies she lost, and throwing them in the air and crying. It was devastating. So, strong recommendation, do your planning.
Exactly. So it's easy, and progesterone's a very stable hormone in the freezer. So once the blood is spun down and the serum is frozen, you can go back and do that. And in fact, in our hospital, we keep all those blood samples from the time of the breeding until the dog has delivered her puppies. Because I learned a long time ago when I worked at a human hospital that saving blood samples will save you multiple times over. So we can always go back and pull those samples for a variety of things, including nomograms, which is a whole other topic that we can talk about in another opportunity. But there's a lot of opportunities if you just keep that blood sample frozen. So talk to your veterinary technician, take her a plate of cookies, promise her that you won't bug her too much, and beg her to draw your blood, stick it in the freezer, and then when you need it, you've got it there. And if you don't, hey, it's okay. That was your safety net. You can throw it out.
Beautiful. we actually have a session that we talked with Dr. Gail Watkins about nomographs, and it's a fascinating topic. And I think one of the things that you're bringing up here that I want to spend just a very brief time on in the midst of the C-section discussion, because it's so important, I think more important here than almost anywhere else, is building that relationship with your veterinarian.
Yeah, and that's really critical. And if you treat your veterinarian well and they respect you, you can have an outstanding relationship. And like I said, in our practice, we love our breeders, but it's not always easy to find a veterinary clinic that's open to working with breeders, that's willing to go the extra mile, that's willing to understand what your needs are, what your health testing needs are, what all the parts that go into your breeding are. What we've done with some clients is that they've been willing to mentor veterinary students in their homes so that they can take them to a dog show, they can take them to an agility event, they can take them to whatever events that they do, they can see all the work that goes into training and to preparing the dog for the event, and then have them come over, they can be on a whelp watch, you can call them, and when your dog does go into labor, you can give them a call, they can hop out of bed, they can run over and watch a whelping, they can see what goes on, and it's a tremendous way to build a bridge with veterinary students who are then going to be your next generation of really important people in your life. There are not enough veterinary students that are interested in working with breeders, and the more we can do to mentor them and help them understand, this is hard work, this is what we do, this is how we get to where we want to be, the better they'll understand you. And believe me, in every veterinary class, there's at least a handful of students that are interested in this. And I speak to the veterinary students pretty frequently. I go to Wisconsin's school every chance I get. I used to travel and speak to veterinary students about legal type of topics. And there's always a handful of them that go, really? I can come over, I can watch, I can be involved in this? Or they already are involved in dogs. So if you've got an opportunity to work with veterinary students in any way, shape, or form, take that opportunity and take them under your wing when they're still baby veterinarians and still malleable enough that you can teach them a lot of things that they want to know about whelping. The first time I was invited to speak to our kennel club here in Wisconsin, they called me and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a lecture on whelping? And I said, sure. And then I went, oh man, I've never seen a normal whelping. Every whelping I've ever seen has been a problem. So I thought, sure, I'll do that. And then totally flipped out when I realized I'd never done it. You know, I've been doing this 36 years. So in the meantime, I've raised corgis for 30 years. So I've had the opportunity to have many of my own litters of puppies to experience that with. But it really helps for a breeder to find somebody that is involved in the dog fancy because they have a much better understanding of what you're going through and what your needs are.
Absolutely. And another thought, if we can't raise our own baby veterinarian, the raising and training of your baby veterinarian, I don't know. So you have a clinic and they're not necessarily a reproductive specialty clinic or something along these lines. What are some ways that dog breeders, dog owners can approach their veterinarian and help the veterinarian understand that they actually want to learn? What are some good approaches if someone came to you and said, I want to learn? How are you going to be willing to do that?
Sure, and we're happy to do that. We've had clients interview us so that they can determine if we're going to be the kind of practice that they're looking for. If you're looking to approach that, I would make an appointment, perhaps without even taking a dog along, just introducing yourself, going in, scheduling an appointment, expecting to pay for a consultation, and sitting down with that veterinary clinic and say, these are my needs, this is my breed, this is what we do for health testing, this is what we need for intervention during breedings and whelpings. And like I said before, always take a plate of cookies or a box of donuts because that will get you in the front door at a veterinary clinic very quickly. They appreciate you. And they know that you're really sincere about this. You go in with some information. You're a member of a breed club. You're a member of an organization of some type. You know what your health screenings requirements are. And just sit down and have a really honest face-to-face talk with them about what your expectations are, what your needs are, what kind of hours. Now, we're open 7 days a week. We know puppies don't come on a schedule. We're not a 24-hour hospital, and it's really difficult to find one that is. So if you find one, really, really take good care of them. And even if you don't, if you're planning your C-sections, those are during the middle of the day. You can really plan on those. Weekends are a little bit harder because not every veterinary clinic is able to staff for Saturday afternoons and Sundays. But again, those are things that if you work out in advance, and you've got a good relationship with their technicians, and they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, she's the lady that always brings brownies. I'm going to come in. You'll oftentimes find that those are the relationships that work out really well. So don't wait until you're in a crisis. Don't wait until the dog's been in labor for 8 hours and there's a puppy that's been stuck for an extended period of time, and then there's a true disaster on your hands or Don't be the person that comes in 3 days after the litter was born with a retained puppy and a really sick dog. So plan ahead. And if they make a recommendation, you don't necessarily have to blindly follow their recommendation, but at least be willing to discuss the pros and the cons of it so that you have an understanding. I have a few clients that are really afraid of taking x-rays of their pregnant dogs. They're concerned about the exposure to radiation, and we have conversations about those things. I have clients that are, they'll come in with one set of ideas, and we have a completely different opinion, but that doesn't mean that we can't work together. It just means we have to have a conversation about how those two things work and how they fit together and how we can make those things go. And frequently, once they've explained their side and I've explained my side, we can come to some really nice understanding. It may be a compromise. It may be that one person says, oh, you're totally right about that. And we may completely cave to the other direction, but it's a good opportunity for you to start working with people in advance before you're in a crisis. That is not the time to find that your veterinary relationship is falling apart.
Absolutely. So back to, you have a bitch that you're expecting to whelp, you have done all the right things, you've timed it out, you have a normal size litter, and somewhere along the line, something's stuck, right? So what are some things that our listeners can do at home to evaluate, is this now an actual emergency? Just a couple, three things. Where are we? We've timed it. We've checked our temperature. Temperature's dropped. It's come back up. And we still have no puppies.
Sure. And I would make sure that you have all your whelping supplies. There is a list on our website, and there is a list in the book. I can share this with you so that you have it on your website as well. So there's a list of things that you should have. The most important at that point is going to be to put on an exam glove so that you are not introducing any bacteria off of your skin up into the reproductive tract. So put on a glove, use some KY jelly, and lubricate it well, and go ahead and do a vaginal exam. Have somebody present to help hold the female's head, because she's not going to be very happy about that kind of an insult. But go ahead and check her, and if you get a green color discharge either on the floor or on your glove, prior to the delivery of the first puppy, or if you can feel a puppy that's stuck, or you can't feel a puppy and she just doesn't seem to be progressing in her labor, then it's time for you to go in. So if she's been in hard labor for more than 2 hours and hasn't progressed, if she's had more than an hour and she's pushing hard on subsequent puppies, those are the times that you need to start intervening. If you see green discharge, green means go at my place. Green means you need to go to the vet right now and get in. We had a Christmas Day delivery here. We had a call from the client. She was due on the 23rd. Didn't have him the 23rd, didn't have him the 24th. Really, she wasn't in any distress. Everything seemed okay. But the morning of the 25th, she'd been nesting all night. Just things weren't going very well. So I said, well, come on in. And they said, well, there's no green discharge, until she walked in my door and the first drip of green hit the floor. And we went, yep, that's where we need to be. There's just nothing else that we can do at this point that's going to save your litter. So at that point, you intervene as quickly as you can. And if you've got a good relationship with that veterinary clinic, you're not going to spend the next 3 hours talking to them about whether they should do a C-section on your dog or not. You look them in the eye, you say, I want a C-section. They go, okay, let me see how fast I can jump through how many hoops, and they will. The blood work and the catheter and all the other things can happen pretty quickly if you've got things lined up and they understand you and you understand them, and you keep your bill current. It's really important that you keep your veterinarian's bill paid, and a lot of breeders tend to wait until the puppies are sold and things like that, but veterinarians have bills to pay, and if we don't take good care of our veterinary staff and our veterinarians, they can't help us either, because they aren't going to be able to pay their staff and pay their electric bill. So don't take advantage of your veterinary clinic and say, well, you know, I'll pay you in 8 weeks when the puppies are sold. Take care of those charges right away. Pull out your credit card, get care credit, use vet billing. There's a couple of different places that you can use. Care credit you can use only at veterinary and dental and medical clinics, so you're not going to go shopping with your credit card. Vet billing will allow you to defer your bill payment over a longer period of time. Those are all the credit applications you can have lined up in advance if you think you might need it. It's like having gas in your car the day you might need a C-section. Don't tell me you've got to stop at the gas station on your way here. Tell me you had your car pointed my direction and the gas tank was full and your whelping supplies were in a box and you were ready to load up. When you say that you're on your way, you're really on your way.
Right. So go back a little bit. I just wanted to go back to this one point. You talk about green means go. You're seeing green discharge before you're seeing a puppy. Tell us what that tells you. What does that green discharge say?
Sure. Green discharge means that you've got placental separation. So the pigment that's made in the blood interface of the placenta and the uterus has a green color to it. If you've ever experienced a whelping and you've gotten that color on your hands, it's going to be there for several days. Be careful that you don't get it on your clothes. But Green tells us that the placenta has separated. Now, if you've already had a puppy, of course there's placental separation because a puppy's been born. But if you see a green vaginal discharge before the first puppy is born, the placenta is separating, that puppy's in trouble. Puppy number one on its way out is in trouble, and if you don't get in there fast and either get the puppy vaginally delivered or get the puppy born by C-section, that puppy's going to have minimal blood flow and you're going to lose that little kid. So you don't want that to happen. And then if that one's separated, then sometimes the ones behind it or upstream from it are also starting to separate as the uterus is contracting. So you can get into some real trouble.
Thank you. That was exactly the clarification I was looking for. The other thing that I thought we could maybe cover real quickly, some of the reasons that a bitch will get into trouble. She's got maybe a narrow pelvis. She's got placentas that don't want to detach. What are some of the things that can be happening when you're saying, no, no, everything should be fine, and there are things that you may not be aware of?
Sure. And the first thing you look at is breed. We know there's some breeds that just have trouble. The brachycephalics in general, which would be the Bulldogs, the Pugs, the Boston Terriers. A lot of those dogs just aren't really built anymore to have a good, successful pregnancy and delivery. Their pelvis is narrow. Their puppies' heads are big. Their shoulders are big. But we also know there's other breeds that you wouldn't necessarily expect that do have trouble. Bernese Mountain Dogs and Greater Swiss Mountain Dogs tend to have primary uterine inertia, meaning that their uterus just doesn't contract effectively. So they may go into labor and deliver a couple of puppies, and then they go, I'm good. You say, no, really, you're not. And they say, no, I'm really good. So at that point, you do have to intervene. Corgis, we have a lot of trouble with Pembroke and Cardigan Welsh Corgis. Again, that narrow pelvis, big head, big shoulder kind of confirmation. So breeds you can't do much about. Number of puppies, we know if there's 1 to 2 puppies or more than 9 puppies that we tend to have trouble. 1 to 2, the puppies tend to be very large and go overdue because the induction of labor is created by the development of the puppy. And if the puppy isn't dressed, it's not going to produce a hormone that tells the mother to go into labor. So with 1 or 2 puppies, they tend to go day 64, day 65, start to run out of time with their placenta. And the puppies may be so big they're just not born very effectively. Or if you have more than 9 puppies, by the time you get to puppy 10, 11, 12, sometimes that uterus has just been contracting for so long, the blood flow to the puppies upstream has been diminished. So those puppies, you'll have a puppy that's born dead and then alive and then a dead one. So at that point, we just recommend if there's more than 9 puppies that you want to intervene with a C-section before you get into trouble. Sometimes it's a malpresentation. About 75% of the time that we see a dystocia, which means difficulty in labor, it's caused by the mother. It means that she's the wrong breed, she's had uterine inertia, she's got a stricture in her vagina, something that's abnormal about her. About 25% it's the puppy, meaning that the puppy's presentation is incorrect. So it's trying to come out shoulder first instead of head first, or it comes down one uterine horn and instead of coming into the vagina, it ends up going up the other uterine horn, or two come together, so it's a log jam. So there's a number of different problems that can cause dystocia. Sometimes they're born upside down. They should be born with their belly button down toward the floor, not belly button up. And now a lot of people get confused by posterior presentations in puppies. 40% of puppies are born back feet first, 60% are born head first. That's not a breech. That's a normal posterior presentation. If you put on a glove, you should feel a tail and 2 feet. If it's coming backwards, you shouldn't just feel a tail with the feet forward. So if the feet are forward, that's a true breech. If the feet are back, that's just a posterior presentation. Absolutely normal. And puppies are kind of torpedo-shaped, like baby pigs and baby kittens. They're torpedo-shaped on both ends. They're not shaped like horses, cows, and humans with an especially large head, long legs, you know, those types of things that would interfere with a normal delivery if they were coming back end first. So back end first in a puppy is okay.
Very good. And one that I have sadly encountered that I had never heard of before, uterine torsion.
Yeah, those are pretty scary. And that's when the uterine horn flips. Occasionally it can flip to the point that the blood flow is completely cut off, and then you have to take the uterus out at surgery. Most of the time that's not the case. It's just that one horn is flipped or both horns are flipped, and as a result the puppy can't engage its head into the cervix and stimulate the ongoing progression of labor. So those dogs will come in, and the owners will just say, you know, she started into labor and everything looked okay, and then she just kind of quit. And she just stared at me, and she just stood there like, well, do something. And for whatever reason, the owners generally have an idea that something's wrong. And if an owner looks at me and says, I need a C-section, I don't know what's wrong, but something's not going the way it should be, take her to surgery, I do not argue with those clients. I'm like, yep, how fast do you want us to go? And, you know, we clear the decks and off we go, because something's usually wrong, and oftentimes that's what it turns out to be, as a torsion.
That was a scary one. Well, thank you very, very much, Marty. I appreciate your time tremendously. I look forward to our continuation of the Veterinary Voice, and your willingness to share your knowledge with our listeners is greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Well, we love doing this. We have a lot of fun. So thank you.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy with her tip of the week to give your dog the leading edge. And Allison is going to talk to us today about double entries. So welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so at Leading Edge Dog Show Academy, we do have, you know, a starter pack for new people that tells you how the ribbons work and how to enter a dog show either by yourself or using an entry service and the cast of players at the dog show, who can you expect. But one of the questions that I didn't answer right away, it's in the course now, of course, but was about entering in more than one class. And so what I mean by this is I have new people and say they have a 10-month-old puppy and they bought it in the United States or showing it in the United States. So they will message me and they'll say, okay, so Fido is 10 months. So I'm going to enter him in 9 to 12 month puppy and American bred, because he was bred in America, and the open class, because that's for any dog. So three classes, right? I enter him in all three classes. And especially at horse shows, a lot of dog people come from horse shows. And in horse shows, that's what you would do. People enter multiple classes in a day. And it's something that you have to explain to people. No, typically, we like to enter our dogs in only one of the classes. So first of all, it is just the norm. That's what we do. We don't enter them in more than one class typically. There is no reason to. And one of the biggest reasons to not do it is that if you win a class, so if you win 9 to 12 puppy, and then you went into American bred and you got second, you are no longer eligible to go into the winner's class because you have already been defeated. So even if you were the second best male there because you went second in the American bred class, and then the judge did think you were the second best one overall because you had won another class, you would not be eligible to compete for winners. So that is the biggest technical reason why we don't want you to enter in more than one class. But it's just not the normal thing that it was done. It's going to point out to the judge right away that you are a newbie in the sport, and we are always competing against professionals in our sport. And, you know, you're going to tire your dog out before winners, and there's just no real good reason to do it. Now, on the flip side of that, some people will say, you know, I want to enter in the 9 to 12 puppy and open because my puppy is looking really mature, and once I get there, I'm going to decide based on the competition what class I'm going to enter him in. So that might be a good theory, but what happens is you can show your dog, if you had your dog entered in five classes, you could enter it in all five classes. But once you mark it absent, you can't show it after that. So say you did enter in 9 to 12, but you decided based on your dog's maturity and the competition, you were going to show it in open, which you had also entered at. If you mark it absent in 9 to 12, you're not eligible to show an open. So it causes all kinds of problems that way. So I just tell people, stick to the class you think your dog is ready for. I like to show my puppies in the puppy class. That's just my personal preference. I see mature puppies in the open class and winning all the time. I don't have a problem with it. It's just my preference to show my puppies in the puppy class. But please, just save yourself a lot of headache and actually quite a money, yes, and enter your dog in one class.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much, Allison. I appreciate your tips. Everybody in the listening world, remember Pure Dog Talk 25 when you check out to take one of Allison's amazing courses. And that will give you a 25% discount on your purchase. And that's going to be worth, I don't know, a couple cups of coffee at least.
Or one of those entries we were just talking about.
Exactly. One of those entries that you didn't waste by not entering two classes. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk. brought to you by the Era Media Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.